Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another wonderful and exciting episode of the Anthology of Horror. I'm your host and narrator, Spring-Heeled Jack, and we're going to get started today after just a few brief disclaimers. First of all, the show might offend you. If you're easily offended, please turn the show off and spare me the negative reviews on the podcast store, or the iTunes store, whatever the fuck you call it, because you won't like the show. This is your first and final warning. Second, I use advertisements in this show that I do not own the rights to. They are the creative property of Rockstar Games. That is all.
On that journey to the top, you probably had to make a few sacrifices, including long-term friendships. But in Los Santos, perception is everything, and anything can be bought. You need to make a splash at social occasions and fill your fancy new house with tons of friends. If it's a glamorous occasion, we'll provide models and movie stars. If it's a business function, we'll bring along oligarchs and senior executives. Perhaps you want something a little funkier. We've got Mirror Park hipsters for hire, so you can slip on your skinny jeans and show your alternative side. People of different ethnicities and sexual preferences will mingle and make you look good instead of the desperate, closed-minded guy you are. Call Appropriate Associates today.
It's the heartbreaking show of human struggle, love, redemption, and hot morons doing drugs in bikinis. Tragedy equals comedy if you give it enough time. Rehab Island. We've put Darwinism into the ultimate struggle as people battle addictions and each other in this hit competitive sobriety show. We take people to the limit, push them over it, and run commercials in between. Alliances form.
Get out! Get out of this hut!
Loves are lost.
I thought you loved me!
I love the coke! I love cocaine!
Hearts explode. And contestants flatline. Rehab Island. Reality finally gets real on CNT.
Alright guys, thank you very much for tuning back in. Today's story is by an author named Joe R. Lansdale, and it's titled The God of the Razor. Richards arrived at the house at about 8. The moon was full, and it was a very bright night. In spite of the occasional cloud cover, it was bright enough that he could get a good look at the place. It was just as the owner had described it, run down, old, and extremely ugly. The style was hard to describe. It was sort of gothic, sort of plantation, sort of cracker box, like maybe the architect had been unable to decide on a game plan or had been drunkenly in love with impossible angles. Digging the key loaned him from his pocket, he hoped that this would turn out to be worth the trip. More than once, his search for antiques had turned into a wild goose chase, and this time was really a long shot. The owner, a sick old man named Klein, hadn't been inside the house in 20 years. A lot of things could happen to antiques in that time, even if the place was locked and boarded up. Theft, insects, rats, leaks, vagrants, any of those, or any combination of them, could turn the finest of furniture into rubble and sawdust in no time. But he figured it was worth the gamble. On occasion, his luck had indeed been phenomenal. As a thick, dark cloud rolled across the moon, Richards, guided by his flashlight, mounted the rickety porch, squeaked the screen, and groaned the door open. Inside, he flashed the light around. Dust and darkness seemed to crawl in there until the cloud passed and the lunar light fell through the boarded windows in a speckled and slated design akin to camouflage netting. In places, Richards could see that the wallpaper had fallen from the wall in big sheets that dangled halfway down to the floor like drooping branches of weeping willow trees. To his left was a wide, spiraling staircase, and following its ascent with his light, he could see there were places where the railing hung brokenly askew. Directly across from this was a door, a narrow, recessed door. As there was nothing in the present room to command his attention, he decided to begin his investigation there. It was as good a place as any. Using his flashlight to bat his way through the skin of cobwebs, he went over to the door and he opened it. Cold air embraced him, and it brought with it a sour smell, like a freezer full of ruined meat. It was nearly enough to turn Richard's stomach, and for a moment he started to close the door and forget about it. But an image of wall-to-wall antiques clustered in the shadows came to mind, and he pushed forward, determined. If he were going to go to all that trouble to get the key and drive way out here in search of some old furniture to buy, then he ought to make sure he had a good look, smell or no smell. Using his flashlight, and helped by the moonlight, he could tell that he had discovered a basement. The steps leading down it looked aged and precarious, and the floor appeared oddly glass-like in the beam of his light, so he could examine every nook and cranny of the basement. Richards decided to descend the stairs. He put one foot carefully on the first step and slowly settled his weight on it. So far, nothing had collapsed. He went down three more steps, cautiously, and though they moaned and squeaked, they held. When Richards reached the sixth step, for some reason he could not define, he felt oddly uncomfortable. He had a chill. It was as if somebody with ice-cold water in their kidneys had taken a piss down the back of his coat collar. Now he could see that the floor was not glassy at all. In fact, the floor was not visible. The reason it had looked glassy from above was because it was flooded with water. From the overall size of the basement, Richards determined that the water was most likely 6 or 7 feet deep, maybe even more. There was movement at the edge of Richards' flashlight beam, and he followed it. A huge rat was swimming away from him, pushing something before it. An old, partially deflated volleyball, perhaps? He couldn't tell for sure. Nor could he decide if the rat was trying to mount the object or bite it, and he didn't care. Two things that gave him the heebie-jeebies were rats and water, and here he found both. To make it worse, the rats were the biggest he'd ever seen, and the water was the dirtiest that he could imagine. It looked to have a lot of oil and a lot of sludge mixed in with it, as well as being completely stagnant. It grew darker, and Richards realized that the moon had been hazed by a cloud again. He let that be a signal. There was nothing more to see here, so he turned, and he started up the stairs. And then he stopped. The very large shape of a man filled the doorway. Richards jerked the light up, saw that the shadows had been playing tricks on him. The man was not as large as he had first thought, and he wasn't wearing a hat like he'd initially thought as well. He had been certain before that the man was, and he could see now that he was mistaken. The fellow was bareheaded, and his features, though youthful, were undistinguished. Any character he might have had seemed to retreat into the flesh of his face or find sanctuary within the dark folds of his shaggy hair. As he lowered the light, Richards thought that he saw the wink of braces on the young man's teeth. "Basements aren't worth a damn in this part of the country," the young man said. "Must have been some damn Yankees come down here and built all this. Someone who didn't know a damn thing about the water table, the weather, and all that." "I didn't know anyone else was here," Richards said. "Did Klein send you?" "I don't know nobody named Klein." "He owns the place. He loaned me a key." The young man was silent a moment. "Did you know the moon is behind a cloud? A cloud come across the moon can change the entire face of the night, change it in a way that some people change the clothes, their moods, or their expressions." Richards shifted uncomfortably. "You know what?" the young man said. "I couldn't shave this morning." "I beg your pardon?" "When I tried to put the blade in my razor, I saw that it had an eye on it, and it was blinking at me very fast. Like this." "Oh, never mind. You can't see from down there, can you?" "Well, it was very fast. I dropped it, and it slid along the sink, dove onto the floor, crawled up the side of the bathtub, and got in the soap dish. It closed its eye then, but it started mewing like a kitten wanting milk. Mew. Mew. Was more the way it sounded, really, but it reminded me of a kitty. I knew what it wanted, of course. What it always wants. What all sharp things want. Knowing what it wanted made me sick, and I threw up in the toilet. Vomited up a razor blade. It was so fat it might have been pregnant. Its eye was blinking at me as I flushed it. When it was gone, the blade on the soap dish started to sing, high and silly-like. The blade I vomited, I know how it got inside of me." The young man raised his fingers to his throat. "There was a little red mark right here this morning, and it was starting to scab over. One or two of them always find a way in. Sometimes it's nails that get in me. They used to come in through the soles of my feet while I slept. but I stopped that pretty good by wearing my shoes to bed. In spite of the cool of the basement, Richards had started to sweat. He considered the possibility of rushing the guy or just trying to push past him, but he dismissed it. The stairs might be too weak for sudden movement, and maybe this hillbilly might just have his say and go on his way. "It doesn't really matter how hard I try to trick them," the young man continued. "They always win out in the end. They always win." "I think I'll come up now," Richard said, trying very hard to sound casual. The young man flexed his legs and the stairs shook and squealed in protest. Richards nearly toppled backwards into the standing water. "Hey!" Richards yelled. "Bad shape," the young man said. "Need a lot of work. Rebuilt entirely would be the ticket." Richards regained both his balance and his composure. He couldn't decide if he was angry or scared, but he wasn't about to move. Going up, he had rotten stairs and Mr. Hillbilly Looney Tunes. Behind him, he had rats and standing water. The proverbial rock in a hard place was where he found himself now. "Maybe it's going to cloud up and rain," the young man said. "What do you think? Think it'll rain tonight?" I don't know," Richard stammered. "Lots of dark clouds floating about. Maybe they're rain clouds. Did I tell you about the god of the razor? I really meant to. He rules the sharp things. He's the god of those that live by the blade. He was my friend Jake's god. Do you know he was Jack the Ripper's god, too?" The young man dipped his hand into his coat pocket, pulled it out quickly, and whipped his arm across his body 2 times, very fast. Richards caught a glimpse of something long and metal in his hand. Even the cloud-veiled moonlight managed to give it a dull silver sparkle. Richards put the flashlight on him again. The young man was holding the object in front of him, as if he wished it to be examined. It was an impossibly large, straight razor. "I got this from old Jake," the young man said. "He got it in an old shop somewhere. Gladewater, I think. Comes from a barber kit. And the kit originally came over the boat from England. Says so in the case. You should see the handle on this baby. Ivory. With a lot of little designs and symbols carved into it." Old Jake looked the symbols up. They're geometric patterns used for calling up a demon. Know what else? Jack the Ripper was no surgeon. He was a barber. I know this because Jake got the razor and started having these visions where Jack the Ripper and the god of the razor came to talk to him. They explained what the razor was for. Jake said the reason they could talk to him was because he tried to shave with the razor and he'd cut himself. The blood on the blade and those symbols on the handle, they opened the gate. Opened it so the god of the razor could come and live inside Jake's head. The Ripper told him that the metal in the blade goes all the way back to a sacrificial altar the druids used. The young man stopped talking, dropped the blade to his side. He looked over his shoulder. "That cloud is very dark, slow moving. I sort of bet on rain." He turned back to Richards. "Did I ask you if you thought it would rain tonight?" Richards found that he couldn't say a word. It was as if his tongue had turned to a cork in his mouth. The young man didn't really seem to notice. Or didn't care. "After Jake had the visions, he just talked and talked about this house. We used to play here when we were kids. Had the boards on the back window rigged so they'd slide like a trap door. Shit, they're still that way. Jake used to say this house had angles that sharpen the dull edges of your mind. I know what he means now. It's comfortable, don't you think?" Richards, who was anything but comfortable, said nothing. He just stood very still, sweating, fearing, and listening, and aiming his light. "Jake said the angles were honed best during the full moon. I didn't know what he was talking about then, but I didn't understand anything about the sacrifices. Maybe you know about him. Been all over the papers and on the TV. The Decapitator, they call him. It was Jake doing it, and from the way he started acting, talking about the god of the razor, Jack the Ripper, this old house and its angles, I started to get suspicious. It got so he wouldn't even come around on or near a full moon. But when the moon started waning, he was different. He was peaceful. I followed him a few times, but I didn't have any luck. He drove to the Safeway and left his car there and just walked. He was as quick and as sneaky as a cat. He'd lose me right off, but then I got to figuring. Him talking about this old house and all, and one full moon, I came here and I waited for him. And he showed up. You know what he was doing? He was bringing the heads here, tossing them down into that water like those South American Indians used to do, toss bodies and stuff into sacrificial pools. It's the angles of the house, you see. Richards had that sensation like ice-cold piss down his collar again, and suddenly, he knew what that swimming rat had been pursuing and what it was trying to do. He threw all 7 heads down there, I figure, the young man said. I saw him toss one. He pointed with the razor. He was standing about where you are now when he did it. When he turned and he saw me, he ran up after me. I froze. I couldn't move a muscle. Every step he took, closer he got to me, the stranger he looked. He slashed me with the razor across the chest, real deep. I fell down and he stood over me, the razor cocked. The young man cocked the razor to show Richards. I think I screamed, but he didn't cut me again. It was like the rest of him was warring with the razor in his hand. He stood up, walking stiff as one of those wind-up toy soldiers, and he went back down the stairs. Stood about where you are now. Looked up at me and drew that razor straight across his throat so hard and deep he damn near cut his own head off. He fell back in the water there and sunk like an anvil. The razor landed on the last step. It wasn't any use. I tried to get him out of there, but he was gone. Like he'd never been at all. I couldn't even see a ripple. But the razor was lying there, and I could hear it. I could hear it sucking up Jake's blood like a kid sucking the sweet stuff out of a lollipop. Pretty soon, there wasn't a drop on it. I picked it up. It was so shiny. So damn shiny. I came upstairs, passed out on the floor from the loss of blood. At first I thought I was dreaming, or maybe I was delirious, because I was lying at the end of this dark alley between these trash cans with my back against the wall. There were legs sticking out of the trash cans like tossed mannequins. Only they weren't mannequins. There were razor blades and nails sticking out of the soles of the feet, and blood was running down the ankles and legs, swirling so that they looked like giant peppermint sticks. Then I heard a noise like somebody trying to dribble a medicine ball across a hardwood floor. Plop, plop, plop. Then I saw the god of the razor. First there's nothing in front of me but stewing shadows, and the next instant he's there, tall and black. Not African, but black like obsidian rock. Had eyes like smashed windshield glass and teeth like polished stick pins. He was wearing a top hat with this shiny band made out of chrome razor blades. His coat and pants looked like they were made out of human flesh. And sticking out of the pockets of his coat were gnawed fingers, like after-dinner treats. He had this big old turnip pocket watch dangling out of his pants pocket on a strand of gut. The watch swung between his legs as he walked, and that plopping sound, you know what it was? His shoes. He had these tiny, tiny feet, and they were fitted right into the mouths of these human heads. One of the heads was a woman's, and it dragged long black hair behind it when the god walked. I kept telling myself to wake up, but I just couldn't. The god pulled his chair out of nowhere. It was made out of leg bones, and the seat looked like scraps of flesh and hunks of hair. And he sat down, crossed his legs, and dangled one of those ragged head shoes in my face. Next thing he does is whip this ventriloquist dummy out of the air, and it looked an awful lot like Jake, and it was dressed like Jake had been the last time I'd seen him down there on the stairs before he fell in the water. The god put the dummy on his knee, and Jake opened his eyes and spoke. "Hey, buddy boy," he said, "how goes it? What do you think of the razor's bite? You see, pal, if you don't die from it, it's like a vampire's bite. You get what I'm saying? You gotta keep passing it on. The sharp things will tell you when, and if you don't want to do it, they'll bother you until you do. Or you slice yourself bad enough to come here, on the dark side. With me and Jack and the others. Well, gotta go back now. Join the gang. Be talking to you real soon. I'm moving into your head." Then he just sort of went limp on the god's knee. And the god took off his hat and he had this zipper running down the middle of his bald head. A goddamn zipper. And he pulled it open. Smoke and fire and noises like screaming and car wrecks happening came out of there. He picked up the Jake dummy, which was real small now, and tossed him into the hole in his head the way you'd toss a treat into a Great Dane's mouth. Then he zipped up again and put on his hat, never saying a word. But he leaned forward and held his turnip watch so I could see it. The watch hands were like skeleton fingers, and there was a face in there pressing its nose in little smudged circles against the glass. And though I couldn't hear it, the face had its mouth open and it was screaming, and that face was mine. Then the god and the alley and the legs and the trash can were gone, and so was that cut on my chest, healed completely, not even a mark. I ran out of there and I didn't tell a soul, and Jake, just like he said, came to live in my head. And the razor started singing to me at night. Probably like one of those siren songs the old Navy guys used to talk about. And come, near and on the full moon, the blades act up. They mew and they get inside of me. Then I know what I need to do. I did it tonight. Maybe if it had rained, I wouldn't have had to do it. But it was clear enough for me to be busy. The young man stopped talking. Turned, stepped inside the house, out of sight, and Richard sighed, but his relief was short-lived. The young man returned and came down a couple of steps. In one hand, by the long blonde hair, he was holding a teenage girl's head. The other clutched the razor. The cloud veil fell away from the moon, and it became quite bright. The young man, with a flick of his wrist, tossed the head at Richard's, striking him in the chest, causing him to drop the light. The head bounced between Richard's legs and into the water with a flat splash. "Now you listen here," Richard started, but anything he might have said aged, died, and turned to dust in his mouth. Fully outlined in the moonlight, the young man stared down the steps, holding the razor before him like a battle flag. Richards blinked. For a moment, it looked as if the guy were wearing a hat. A tall black one with a shiny metal band. And he was much larger now, and between his lips was a shimmer of wet, silver teeth like 32 polished stick pins. Plop, plop came the sound of his feet on the steps. And in the lower and deeper shadows of the stairs, it looked as if the young man had not only grown in size and found a hat, but had darkened his face and stomped his feet into pumpkins. But one of the pumpkins streamed long, dark hair. Plop, plop. Richard screamed, and the sound of it rebounded against the basement walls like a Super Bowl. Shattered starlight eyes beneath the hat, a Cheshire cat smile of shiny needles and a carbon face, a big, dark hand holding the razor, whipping it back and forth like a lion's talon, snatching at a warm, soft prey. Swish, swish, swish. Richard's scream was dying in his throat, if not in the echoing basement when the razor flashed for him. He avoided it by stepping briskly backwards. His foot went underwater, but found a step there momentarily. The rotting wood gave way. He twisted his ankle, and it sent him plunging into the cold, foul wetness. Just before his eyes, like portals on a sinking ship that were covered by liquid darkness, he saw the god of the razor, now manifested in all of his horrid form. He saw him lift a splitting head shoe and step into the water after him. Richards torqued his body, swam long, hard strokes, and his hand touched something cold and clammy down there on the bottom of the basement, and a piece of it came away in his fingers. Flipping it from him with a fan of his hand, he fought his way to the surface and broke water as the blonde girl's head bobbed in front of him, two rat passengers aboard, gnawing viciously at the eye sockets. Suddenly, the girl's head rose, perched on the crown of the tall hat of the god of the razor, then it tumbled off, rats and all, into the greasy water. Now there was the jet-black face of the god of the razor, and his mouth was open and his teeth blinked briefly before his lips drew tight. And the other hand, like an eggplant sprouting fingers, clutched Richard's coat collar and plucked him forward. And Richard's, the charnel breath of God in his face, the sight of the lips slashing wide to once again reveal brilliant dental work, went limp as a pelt. And the god raised the razor to strike, and the moon tumbled behind a thick, dark cloud. White face, shaggy hair, no hat, a fading glint of silver teeth, the young man holding the razor, clutching Richard's coat collar, was back. The juice back in his heart, Richards knocked the man's hand free and the guy went under, came up thrashing, went under again, and when he rose this time, the razor was frantically flaying the air. "I can't swim," he bellowed. "I can't." Under he went, and this time he did not come up. But Richards felt something touch his foot from below. He kicked out savagely, dog paddling wildly all the while. Then, the touch was gone, and the sloshing water went immediately calm. Richards swam towards the broken stairway, tried to ignore the blonde head that lurched by him, now manned by a 4-rat crew. He got hold of the loose, dangling stair rail and began to pull himself up. The old board screeched on the loosening nail, but held until Richards gained a hand on the door ledge. Then it gave way with a groan and went to join the rest of the rotting lumber in the water, the heads, the bodies, the faded stigmata of the god of the razor. Pulling himself up, Richards crawled into the room on his hands and knees, rolled over on his back, and something flashed between his legs. It was the razor. It was stuck in the bottom of his shoe. That had been the touch he had felt below. The young guy was still trying to cut him, or perhaps accidentally struck him during his desperate thrashing to regain his composure and get to the surface of the water. Sitting up, Richards took hold of the ivory handle and freed the blade. He got to his feet and stumbled towards the door. His ankle and foot hurt like hell, where the step had given way beneath him. It hurt him so bad he could hardly walk. Then he felt the sticky, warm wetness oozing out of his foot to join the cold water in his shoe, and he knew that he had been cut by the razor. But then he wasn't thinking anymore. He wasn't hurting anymore. The moon rolled out from behind a cloud like a colorless eye, and he just stood there looking at his shadow on the lawn, the shadow of an impossibly large man wearing a top hat, with ball shoes on his feet, holding a monstrous razor in his hand.
Bored but bossy? Desperate for power and upset nobody will listen to you? Keen to patronize? Try a career in human resources. Your job is to fire people or make them feel bad for telling funny jokes. Take the joy and pleasure out of the workplace. Work is called work for a reason. It shouldn't be fun. You'll have more power than management. Make people fill out long questionnaires about their feelings so you can sell the data or blackmail them at a later point. Get paid to snoop on employee email. Train for 3 evenings and you'll be qualified to begin an exciting career as a human resources professional. Contact Ovine Human Resources Academy today.
Read the incredible self-help book that's rewriting the rules on addiction. It's the hot new addiction everyone's talking about. It's sex addiction. Finally, you can shove personal accountability straight up your ass. Leonard Etcher's remarkable 13 Steps to Heaven.
Hi, I'm Leonard Etcher. Everyone's talking about it. Nobody knows what it is. Now, thanks to 13 Steps to Heaven, here's your chance to join me and become a fully blown sex addict. All the glamour of personal problems without health risks or loneliness. Guys, let's be honest. The difference for most men between being a sex addict or not is opportunity. My book will explain the myths and realities of sex addiction in an honest and easy to understand way. I'll teach you how to juggle multiple partners at once and blame your complete lack of morality and personal accountability on an addiction that doesn't exist.
Pick up 13 Steps to Heaven today.
All right, squad, thank you very much for tuning back in. I appreciate you guys continuing to listen. I know I cranked out a lot of content in October, but the numbers are still going strong. Thank you for that. If you guys haven't already done so, could you please rate the show 5 stars on the podcast station or podcast store, whatever the fuck it's called, for Apple, and 5 stars on Spotify. If you could, it helps with the search algorithm. It doesn't cost you any money, but I would greatly appreciate it. Means a lot to me. Thank you guys very much for tuning back in. As I said before, I appreciate you guys. Hope you had a wonderful spooky season so far. I'll have more content out for you soon. Thank you guys very much for listening, and until next time, stay spooky.